Tonight, we are continuing in our Elements of Life series. This is a series through the book of Genesis, and we are looking at elements that don't appear on the periodic table, but they are crucial to our lives. We've looked at elements like creation, like temptation, suffering, fear, and last week, my husband Josh started this two-week look at the element of grace. The element of grace in our lives. Well, I should introduce myself. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Katie Moran. Josh and I were students in Chi Alpha. We were sitting where you're sitting. Not actually, because we didn't meet here. We were much smaller then. But we were students in Chi Alpha a long time ago, and God transformed our lives through Chi Alpha. We then met each other. Well, we actually knew each other. Then we started dating. Then we did this CMIT program as a way to give a year and pray about a lifetime to missions. And it was in that year that God spoke to both of us, and he said, lifetime. So here we are, a bunch of years later, and we are still so excited about seeing students encounter Jesus, seeing students transformed by God. Yeah, it's amazing. Josh and I have three kids. I don't know if you can see them. They're really cute. If you can't see them on here, just look at my Facebook. It's like filled with pictures of them. So here we have Emma, and Emma is, let me stand over here. Emma is 5 and a half, and she's in kindergarten this year. And then in the middle, we have Judah. Baby Judah, or baby Juba, as John Shin refers to him. I don't know if you're here. John Shin got to, or had to, I don't know how you look at it, live with us during Sikkim, which is the best week ever. I think there might still be spots open, so if you want to come live with us for the week, it's really awesome. I'll make you pancakes. And then we have Levi over here, and Levi is 3, and he is so much fun. I want to tell you guys a story about Judah tonight before we look at our text. So a couple of months ago, I was at my dining room table, and I was preparing a devotional that I was going to be sharing with some women. And Emma and Levi were at school, and Judah was taking a nap, and I was ready to get some work done. So I'm sitting there at my table. I have my Bible, I have my computer, and I have my coffee. All essential items for getting serious work done, right? So we drink a lot of coffee in our house. Come over. We'll treat you to a cup. So I'm sitting there, and at this point, I've kind of written some things down, but I'm just praying because I'm like, Lord, I need your help. What do you want to speak to these ladies in this devotional? What do you want to speak to me right now? God, I want to speak out of an overflow of what you're speaking to me. And so I'm there praying, and I'm having an amazing moment with God. And then I hear it. Judah has woken up from his nap early. I was so frustrated, and I was so upset. I'm like, God, we were having a sweet moment. Couldn't you have made him, like, keep sleeping? Like, you're God. You can do that. Come on. Help me out here. And so I'm frustrated. But then God spoke to me, and he said, keep praying. I'm going to teach you something. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll keep praying, be obedient. So I prayed as I got up from the table begrudgingly, as I walked through our kitchen, up the steps, down the hall to Judah's room. I just kept praying, God, what do you want to show me? What do you want to teach me? And as I entered Judah's room, I saw that he was a hot mess. This kid had snot, like, all over his face. He was, like, red in the face. Have you guys ever woken up and you immediately realize when you wake up that you didn't get enough sleep? Like, you're grumpy, you're irritated, maybe you have a headache. You just know that was not enough sleep. I'm sure you guys have that feeling a lot. I do, too. It doesn't end. Judah was upset, and he was standing there in his crib. He's only one. He can't get out of his crib himself. We have to come and take him out. And he's standing there holding on to these slats. His crib has lots of slats. It's kind of like a cage or a jail, if you think about it. But it's okay. He can't get out of it, so yeah, it's great. So he has these slats. And when I walked over to him, you know, he's crying, he's sobbing, he's so sad. And he looks pitiful. And he's holding on to the slats. And he's, like, trying to get up. He's, like, trying to get himself out. And he can't. He's never done it before. He's not big enough. And there are slats. So every time he puts his foot up, it just goes through. And he gets even more mad. And so then I walk over to him, and I'm like, Judah. You know, I'm like, Judah. I hold my hands out for him over the crib. Judah, come here, Judah. And he ignores me completely. And he just keeps trying to do it himself. He keeps trying to climb the crib, determined to get out of this prison himself. And he's just ignoring me. I'm like, Judah, come on, we do this every day, twice a day, maybe three times a day on good days. Like, I always get you out of your crib. I've never left you in there forever. Like, come on, this is routine. I'm always here. I'm always here to get you out. But he still keeps trying to do it himself. And this is a moment when God spoke to my heart, and he said this. Sometimes, Katie, you're so focused on trying to do things by yourself that you ignore the fact that I am with you, that I have always been with you, and that I will always be with you. So then I think I started crying. How often are we like Judah? How often do we try to do things on our own, forgetting or ignoring the fact that God is always with us? We're going to continue looking at the life of Jacob tonight. And Jacob often forgets that God is with him. And Jacob likes to be in control and do things on his own. Despite the fact that time after time, God reminds him and gives him signs and visions and dreams that he is with him. Despite this, Jacob continues trying to do things on his own. Last week, we picked up in Jacob's story when he was running away from home because he had just tried to control a situation in a really bad way. He stole basically his brother's future. He stole Esau's birthright and his blessing. And he is running for his life. And we saw last week that it's in this moment that God comes to Jacob, who is a liar, who is a cheat, whose name means deceiver and struggler, a name that he lives up to. We see God come and in his grace give Jacob this beautiful promise of a future, of possessions, of security. And let's look at that promise really quickly before we go on. This is the promise. I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of your father Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All the peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I promised. So we saw last week, Jacob receives this beautiful promise from God in a beautiful dream where he sees angels, where he sees God, where he sees a staircase from heaven. And then Jacob goes to his uncle's house, and he acts like it never happened. He still acts like everything depends on him. And he still struggles to get what he wants. He still struggles and strives to get all of the things that he thinks will satisfy him. Tonight, we're going to see that God in his grace, he meets Jacob Actually, he brings Jacob to his weakest point. And it is here in Jacob's greatest weakness that God changes his life forever. Would you turn with me to Genesis 32? So at this point, Jacob is on his way home from his uncle's after being gone for almost 15 years. Something that is key to note is that when Jacob left for the first time before his dream at Bethel, his mom said to him, she said, "Jacob, don't worry. When Esau's anger has subsided, I'll send a message and I'll let you know that it's okay to return home." Well, as far as I read, he never got that message. So Jacob, in Jacob's mind, Esau is probably very upset still. In Jacob's mind, he is going back to an uncertain future. Let's pick it up in verse 1 of chapter 32. "Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, 'This is the camp of God.'" Angels meet Jacob on his journey. It's yet another sign of God saying, "Jacob, Jacob, I'm with you. I've got you. I'm here." Verse 3, "Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, 'This is what you are to say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, men servants, maid servants, and now I am sending this message to my lord that I might find favor in your eyes.'" Did you catch the words that he uses? "Esau, my lord, your servant Jacob." He's trying to give the impression that he's ready to return to his proper position as the younger brother. And he's very careful and crafty. He's smart. He uses his words carefully and chooses them carefully. Verse 6, "When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, 'We went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you with 400 men. And Jacob was like, "This is going to be the best welcome home party and the world's ever seen," right? No. Quite the contrary. Jacob's hopes for any kind of peaceful reunion are probably gone at this point. If there was any hope in his mind, it is probably gone now. So let's see what Jacob's response is. Yes, he's received this news about the 400 men coming with his brother, but we just saw God showed him that he's with him. God sent these angels, and God gave him a promise. And God has continued to show him through the years in between that he is with him. So let's see what Jacob's response is, because his response and our response in times of crisis and uncertainty will tell us a lot about what we believe about God and our relationship with him. His response and our response in times of uncertainty and crisis tell us a lot about what we believe about God and our relationship with him. So let's pick it up in verse 7. "In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and the herds and the camels as well. And he thought, 'If Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that's left may escape.'" So right away we see Jacob taking control of the situation and trying to manipulate it to be somewhat in his favor. But then he does something that seems good. He prays. Let's read his prayer. Verse 9. "Then Jacob prayed, 'O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown to your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted.'" Right away, I noticed something. Jacob says, God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac. This prayer is still to someone else's God. At this point, Jacob has not allowed God to become his own, the God of Jacob. Which makes sense because the rest of the prayer is fear-filled. And we saw it in verse 7, in great fear and distress is how he responded. Jacob is afraid because he doesn't trust God. And he doesn't trust that God is with him because he doesn't know God for himself. Woo! Like, where am I? I should have, like, done an Aaron move and just, like, dropped to the ground or something. Didn't know what that was. So Jacob's prayer is to the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac. His prayer is filled with fear. And then it almost seems like he's trying to manipulate God. Like he's like the master manipulator. And so when I was reading this, I was kind of like, are you manipulating God right now? Are you really doing that? Because he's like, God, you said this. Don't forget. And then my favorite line is when he says, I just think this is funny and I might be the only one. For I am afraid he will come and attack me. And also the mothers with their children. He's like playing on God's compassion. Like, the children, God. The children. Save the children. And also save me. So then we see in the next several verses that Jacob continues to try to control the situation. He sends gifts to Esau, gifts of livestock. He even continues to control what his messengers say as they're going to arrive to Esau. And he even spaces out the gifts. Like, he's smart, you know. He understands people. He really wants to pacify Esau so that in hopes of when he finally meets Esau, that Esau won't kill him. So we pick up in verse 24. When Jacob is left alone, he has sent everything ahead of him, all of his possessions and all of his family. Everyone's gone, and Jacob is alone. Last time Jacob was alone and afraid, God sent a beautiful dream, a beautiful reminder that God said, I'm with you, Jacob. This is my promise for you. I will never leave you. I will always protect you and be with you. Let's see what God's response is tonight. And some of you know from the subtitle right above it that this is a little different. So read with me starting in 24. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. And then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. And then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. Please tell me your name, Jacob said. But he replied, why do you ask my name? And then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. So God's response to Jacob being alone and afraid at a very weak emotional state is to jump him and wrestle him to the ground all night. And then he makes him even weaker by touching his hip. What? When Pete first asked me to jump into the series, I was really excited. And then they told me what passage they wanted me to preach from. And I was like, I don't even understand that passage. I usually just skip over it. Like, that was some weird stuff in Genesis. And then we get to, like, Joseph. But as I have studied this passage, as I've read it and reread it and read it in context and studied what other people say also as they've studied, I have learned that this is a beautiful picture of God's grace. And that this is my story as well. Let's break this down and look at it. Verse 24 says, Jacob was left alone. So all of the things that Jacob had been struggling for his whole life, possessions, a future, his family, all of these things that we see struggle and manipulation and control over in the chapters before, they're all gone. He is alone, not knowing if he will ever see them again. And then in verse 24, it says that a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And we know, because we read the full passage, that this man is actually God. So God wrestles with him until daybreak. Now, from what I know about wrestling, which is not much, I've actually never been to a wrestling match. What I know about wrestling is that wrestling matches are timed in minutes, not in hours, and definitely not all night long, because of the amount of energy that is exerted when people wrestle. But this says that they wrestled all night. So Jacob must have been completely physically exhausted. Like, he was already an emotionally low point, and then wrestling all night, he's at a physical low as well. Just completely exhausted. And he probably thought his opponent was too. But then, verse 25, it is now that God touches his hip. And this word, touch, means a touch in the lightest sense. Like, if you think of it in your head, think of like a gentle tap, like barely touching. And this touch dislocates Jacob's hip. So after wrestling all night, being exhausted, assuming that his opponent was exhausted, the fact that his opponent simply barely taps him and causes so much pain and damage, Jacob would have known immediately, this is not a man that I am fighting. And then verse 26, the man says, let me go, for it is daybreak. Light bulbs go off for Jacob. The strength, the timing. This is God. And it's at this point. It's at this point that the screen goes up. It's at this point when Jacob is at his weakest point, his absolute weakest point, physically, emotionally, that when he realizes that it's God, when he comes face to face with God, that his strategy changes and he begins to, instead of wrestle with God, instead of fight God like he's been doing his whole life, he begins to cling to God. There was a time in my own life when I was at a weak point. I was a student at UVA. I was in Chi Alpha. I'd been dating a guy for almost 3 years. It was in the summer, a summer of 7 Chi Alpha weddings. 7. It was a Monday night. It was the day after one of the weddings, and it was a few days before another on Saturday. Actually, the one on Saturday was Kelly Baker's wedding, and she's in the back. She was my first year core group leader and housemaid in the Salt Shack. Woo! With Sajak, and is a dear friend. So grateful to have you here. So I'm in the middle of this summer of 7 weddings, and it's Monday. My boyfriend and I had talked about getting married. We'd looked at rings, done all these crazy things. It was not Josh Moran, so this will tell you where the story's going. It was Josh's housemate. That wasn't in the notes. That wasn't in the notes. So it's here. So it's here in this night. I go back home from work, and he comes over, and he breaks up with me. Out of the blue, breaks up with me. I felt like I had lost everything. Everything I was planning on, everything from my present, everything from my future. All of the things that I had in place and thought were going to happen, it was gone. Everything I had put my trust in, because I wasn't putting my trust in the Lord, it was in this relationship, in this future that I had planned, it was gone. And I was at the weakest point of my life. At one point, I didn't even know if I wanted to live anymore because I was so afraid of what my future would be like. And also, this is real, my grandma died that week. Like, I'm not even making this up. It's kind of funny. But it's not. And I went and I met with my mentor, Michelle. I poured out my heart to her about how bad I was doing, how much life was just really bad at that point. And she said something that night that I will never forget. She looked at me after pouring out my story to her, and she said, "Oh, Katie, I envy you." And I'm like, "What? Did you just hear my story? I don't think, like, let me tell you again, because you obviously didn't hear it." She said, "Oh, Katie, I envy you, because it was at the times that I was weakest in life that I most clearly have sensed the power and the presence of God in my life." And you know what? She was right. I am convinced that it was God that brought me to that low point in my life so that he could help me see myself clearly and so that he could help me see him clearly, his power and his presence in my life. And I have never been the same. C.S. Lewis says, "God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our consciences, but he shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world." It's like Jacob brings God, or God brings Jacob to this point, saying, "You have been struggling to get all these things you thought would satisfy you. You have been struggling for all of these blessings from people, and you have been looking in the wrong place, Jacob. I have been there the entire time. I have been with you. I have given you promises of a future. All of the things that you deeply desire, I have given you and promised you." And it's when Jacob is at his weakest that he sees God clearly and that his life is changed because he chooses to stop fighting God and to cling to him. And then God gives him the greatest blessing. He gives him a new life with God. Verse 27 says, the man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. In God's grace, he gives Jacob a new life with him. He asked Jacob his name, not because God doesn't know his name. He asked Jacob his name so that Jacob will admit who he has been. He has been deceiver, and he has been struggler, and he has been doing it all on his own. And then God in his grace changes Jacob's name. He says, you are changed. I am giving you new life. You have overcome and you win, Jacob. How does Jacob win against our powerful God? How does Jacob wrestle God and win? Like, this just doesn't add up, right? Tim Keller says, if God had won the fight, he would have lost what he truly wanted, and that was Jacob. A simple tap dislocated Jacob's hip. God could have done a whole lot more if he had wanted to. But instead, God restrains his strength so that he could have a relationship with Jacob, because that is what he wanted. He wanted Jacob to know him. Could God have continued his plan for redemption of the earth without Jacob knowing him? Yes, he's God. But that is not what God wanted. God wanted a relationship with Jacob because he loved him. And he loves you. That is why Jesus came to the earth and he died a sinner's death on the cross, even though he never sinned in his entire life. He was sinless. And yet he died on the cross. And this time, God did not restrain his strength. This time, God gave Jesus the full weight of his power. God put his entire weight on Jesus. And he had to if the penalty for sin was going to be paid. God couldn't hold back. And it killed Jesus. And he did this by his grace so that we could be free from the penalty of sin, so that we can live a life with God, a new life, life by the Spirit, the same Spirit that came and enabled Jesus to rise from the dead. The same Spirit, the Holy Spirit, is present with us and lives in us when we say yes to God being our God. Keller says, God only jumps you to bless you. I love that. The summer that I went through my weakest time, I met God for myself, and I met him in my weakest point, and I finally let him be God in every area of my life. No holding back. The text tells us that like I was never the same, Jacob was never the same after encountering God. Verse 31 says, the sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. And then if you jump over to chapter 33, verse 20, it says, there he set up an altar, and he called it El Elohi Israel, God, the God of Israel. Finally, Jacob gets it. Finally, Jacob sees himself clearly, and he sees God clearly. And in the grace of God, God gives him a limp so that he will never forget. God gives him a limp so he will never forget the night that God brought him to his most weakest state. And that God gave him new life. He completely changed his life. 2 Corinthians 12, 8 through 10 says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with my weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Would the band make their way up? I have two questions for you tonight to consider. The first question is, do you know God for yourself? You see, Jacob knew of God. He believed in God. He even prayed. But Jacob did not know God for himself. Your core group leader, your friends, cannot know God for you. Your mom, your grandfather, your housemate cannot experience God for you. You must experience him yourself. You must get alone with God. It doesn't mean we don't need community, but it means that at some point you have to choose to let God be your God. Just as God wanted a relationship with Jacob, God wants a relationship with you tonight. The God that created you, the God that chose to breathe life into you, the God that knows everything about you, and the God that endured the full weight of judgment and justice on the cross. He desires a relationship with you. He wants you to know him for yourself. My second question is there a weakness in your life that you haven't stopped trying to fight on your own? Some area of your life. Maybe you've said yes to God in other areas, but there is some area of your life that you're determined to do on your own. Maybe it's something emotionally, maybe it's a physical ailment, maybe it's a sin that you're struggling with, but if there's something in your life that you're still trying to control, still trying to do on your own, I want to encourage you tonight to cling to Jesus. Don't try to do things on your own, because God is here and he is saying, "I am here. I've always been here. I'm going to always be here. I've always been faithful to you. And I always will be. I am with you and I love you." Cling to Jesus. His grace is sufficient in every area of your life, in everything that you might go through. Grace is sufficient for you. What would our fellowship look like if we all knew God for ourselves? If we all said yes to letting God be our God in all of the areas of our life? If we lived in this new life that God gives us, we would be people of the Spirit. God says he puts his Spirit in us. When we say yes to him, we would be people who are loving, who are joyful, and who have peace. Can you imagine if this many people lived like that on the university, how this university would be impacted for Jesus? And then how the world would be impacted. Would you stand and pray with me? We're going to going to have a couple of minutes for you guys to reflect individually after I pray. Just a couple of minutes, and then I've asked Jenny to sing to lead us in Amazing Grace. And I've asked that when Jenny sings, that we just sing a cappella, because I want the individual time to be time for you to meet God face to face, to meet God one-on-one, and then for that song of Amazing Grace to be a declaration of what God has done for each of us. Let's pray. God, we thank you for your grace, that in your grace you choose to be in relationship with us, that in your grace you endured the full weight of God on the cross, and that you love us so much that you will never stop pursuing us. God, would you open our eyes to your presence and your power tonight and help us never forget to cling to you.